So, and that's a great segue. Why don't we talk a little bit, again, getting a little more granular now into the restructuring environment. We've got, let's say, a transaction, a significant transaction that's being proposed with an affiliate or somehow there's some insider connection. And how does that interplay with having an independent director involved with 363 issues and those sorts of things and the level of scrutiny that a court is going to apply to considering whether to approve that transaction?
Yeah, clearly there's a heightened scrutiny, and the independent director comes in to, independently assess the transaction and potentially provide testimony in support of the transaction. And so, again, it's critical that the independent director has the ability to scrutinize the transaction and not just rubber stamp something that maybe was preordained before they were retained.
All right, and I think it's fair to say that, again, from the judicial perspective, and I'd be interested if any of my colleagues, I'm sure they would agree with this, having that independence is obviously really helpful to us. The key is to kind of build up that credibility. I mean, it's one thing to just be able to say, well, we have an independent director, but going back to what David said earlier, and I think Ryan highlighted it too, what does that mean? I mean, are we just talking about an appointment, or are we talking about somebody who's actually taken the role, embraced it, understands the significance and importance of it, is getting under the kimono, if so to say, and actually knows what's going on and has evaluated the situation, which again, from our perspective, can be very helpful to the process. So let's shift gears now and talk a little bit. We've kind of hinted around the edges, but let's talk about the mechanics of selecting an independent director. Who should that, independent director be? What are the attributes that a company should be looking at? And how does that interplay with the other constituents in a bankruptcy case? So let me, I guess, start with you, David, if I can, and just from kind of a timing consideration, if the decision is we know we're headed into bankruptcy, we know that we have an insider perception problem. From your perspective, what would be the things to be thinking about in terms of whether or not an independent director should be appointed? Kind of heading into a bankruptcy process, and what are the challenges from a business perspective that you have in terms of advising the client about actually taking on that, biting off on that project?
Yeah, well, it certainly requires some foresight and then sort of thinking ahead of seeing what's coming down the road. Insolvency, but maybe preferably zone of insolvency, is when you want to be thinking about. Small case, I guess, ZOI, is when you want to be thinking about appointing an independent director. Certainly prior to, if at all possible, negotiations starting with creditors or around an RSA, to the extent that there are contemplated transactions with affiliates, rescue financings, bridge financings, asset sales to try to bolster the company's position. You'd want to do it before those happen. To the extent there are negotiations, for instance, between a parent and a subsidiary where the subsidiary, may file, putting an independent director or two in place is pretty critical. I was just involved in a situation out of court where the parent and sub were separately financed, but there was no separate board at the subsidiary. And there was no separate management team at the subsidiary. And in order to, and smartly, the parent and their advisors, right, figured out that there needed to be a board of the subsidiary, of the separately financed subsidiary, and put that board in, and we were able to effectuate a recapitalization transaction at the subsidiary, but do it in a way that, was beneficial to the subsidiary without the influence of the parent in the transaction. So that was certainly a smart use, and we avoided a formal restructuring. Because we were able to recapitalize the company out of court. So sooner the better, certainly in any of those circumstances.
And Ryan, what about post-petition? I mean, trying to, again, be proactive, probably not the greatest thing from a visibility standpoint if the decision to put in an independent director is made after the motion for the appointment of a Chapter 11 trustee has been made for mismanagement. But from your perspective, you're advising clients post-petition, what are the types of things that you're talking to clients about to, I guess, try to emphasize when is it appropriate to take the leap, you know, with the considerations of the expense and concerns and loss of control, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're talking about that issue post-petition, you're in a compromised situation. You know, you either have some commentary from the bench, you know, questioning the independence of your board or management team, or you've got a pretty comprehensive objection by a major stakeholder challenging, again, your board and their business judgment. And so there's a lot of hair on it if you're attempting to appoint a director post-petition. You know, typically you'll see a debtor proactively try to enter into an independent director agreement subject to court approval in those instances. And again, it's a compromise with the objecting party to maybe a restructuring support agreement or some kind of proposed transaction. And so the independent director will be appointed really, again, to compromise whatever motion is before the court. It's less than ideal, and we talked about this in connection with our prep. I mean, there's kind of a higher bar for whether or not an independent director may even want to